WPFW, Washington.
Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's Next Door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and June. Mark, Terry, and Garland, three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM. Welcome again, live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levy, sitting with
Terry D. Kester.
And Garland Nixon is apparently snowed in.
Can you believe it? And there's what, quarter inch out there?
Somewhere in suburban Maryland. Yeah, his wheels are spinning. And yeah,
well, that happens all the time.
Well, but this time it's not metaphorical. Literal. He is not coming in. But that doesn't mean you can't come in. If you've been driving around in the snow, you'll see that at least in the District of Columbia, it's not that bad out. It's mostly just kind of rain. Same is true for Northern Virginia. There's still time to come down to 1213 U Street. You can also take the Metro and join us here at Ben's Next Door.
Next door to
Ben's Chili Bowl.
Yeah, right across from the Metro stop at 12th Street and U. More can you ask?
U Street, Cardozo, really. So if you don't want to go out in the snow, just hop on the Metro and join us. The food is good, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation here on WPFW 89.3 FM because we're going to talk about some analysis that you haven't seen on the news. Regarding the tragedy in Arizona, there are many facets to this. One that has been talked about, but I want to talk about further, is the political rhetoric. And when it goes too far, and that's not just true on the right, it's true on the left as well. When does it go too far? We all have free speech in America. No one's trying to censor anyone. But when should we pull back a bit in terms of what we criticize and what we don't? And then the main topic I want to focus on today, and it seems pretty basic, but I don't see anyone on the news focusing on it much, is what does it take to keep a crazy person from buying a gun in America, particularly in Arizona? I've talked before about these Arizona gun shops, long before this happened. In fact, I've been on air on national news talking about the Arizona immigration bill. And one of the things I pointed out at that time is they were so worried about Mexican drug gangs that maybe someone was coming out across the border in Arizona. It's a very, I don't know, American-centric way of thinking because they weren't referring to the more than 10,000 people who've been murdered in northern Mexico by these drug gangs. And the one thing Americans weren't focusing on is where their guns were coming from. 90%
The Washington Post did a great expose on that. And, Mark's going to give you a few more facts there, but in case you didn't realize, there's only one place you can get guns legally in Mexico. There's only one place. It's in the capital, Mexico City. Huh. It's a military place. Mm-hmm. You have to go. You have to register. You have to sign the papers. You have to be identified, et cetera. That's the only place you can get guns in Mexico. They have some of the best gun control of any country, and guess who's violating it?
And yet there's about a dozen shops just across the border in Arizona you have to be breathing, I think, but I'm not sure that's required.
Not required.
Could just push a corpse in and hand them a semi-automatic machine gun. One of the things that I have not seen the media focus on very much, Terry, is the fact that this particular weapon used by this particular crazy 22-year-old, and I have no doubt that he's insane, but there's always going to be insanity with us. You don't have to give every one of them a semi-automatic high magazine machine gun. But
Pistol. Glock. A good old Glock. Got to have a Glock. You're not a true Arizonan, if you don't have a Glock.
A high magazine Glock. Yeah. Because you know that deer's going to get away unless you have 45 shots.
At least,
that deer.
Yeah. The extended magazine. And
when you shoot it all, I guess the bullets make the meat ripen better?
I don't know. But you got to have at least two of those magazines, extended magazines, as a hunter. And for target practice, because you might miss 31, 32 times.
But then with 45, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Here's what I don't understand.
Insane.
Here's what I don't understand.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you do know that that was outlawed.
It was for about 20 years.
Yeah, right.
And then under George Bush,
the law expired. And
Renew the assault weapons ban. Yeah, and I remember what they said. They said it doesn't make a difference. So what? What's the difference between a one-shot rifle and a 45 bullet, ammunition, magazine. You know what's interesting?
You know what the difference is? It's 32 dead kids at Virginia Tech. That's the difference.
Well, or 20 people shot and at least six dead in Arizona.
Right.
What's interesting to me is when you see what happened in Arizona. What happened? Shot the congresswoman right through the head. Shot the judge. Shot the 9-year-old girl. Shot the infant. He shot 20 people. And when did he get caught? When he was changing his magazine.
Yes, uh-huh. Yep.
Because two brave men jumped on him, a brave woman grabbed the magazine from him. Yeah. The only reason he was stopped is because he ran out of bullets.
Ammunition. Yeah, and if he'd had an assault rifle, he could have kept on going.
If he'd had a six-shooter instead of a .45 magazine, he probably would have shot the congresswoman, maybe one other person, and four other people would be
alive.
That
doesn't make me a lot happier, but I see your point.
Well, that's my point about the high magazine assault rifle. The other point I want to make is...
Pistol.
Assault weapon,
yeah.
According to Twitter standards. The other point I want to make, though, has to do with the mentally ill. And it seems to me a pattern, and if you haven't noticed it, you're blind, of mentally ill people who are violently insane, getting guns and using them. This is true in Virginia Tech. It's true today. It's true on the Long Island Railroad. It's true any number of examples in our nation's history. And the fascinating thing, again, with this guy... is, I don't know, Terry, did you see that woman who said that she was in his class at community college?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what did she say? She said, we were sure...
that something was going to happen. I mean, she actually was sitting close to the door so she could get out.
He came back with his gun.
Yeah, I mean,
she
was...
fully expected it. So my question for you, Terry, to start tonight, and there's a lot of different facets of this, but my question for you tonight is, given that we have to have some protections, you can't just willy-nilly throw people in the insane asylum. Obviously, you know, there's a danger in overreaching there. But what do you think should be the law when someone has reason to believe, as this woman clearly did in the community college, and there's no reason to suspect she was out to get the guy, she was literally afraid for her life. How do you think, with him, with the guy at Virginia Tech, what should school officials, students, what should be done when they see someone who is clearly showing the signs of insanity, and particularly of violent insanity? How should it be reported? How should we protect their rights? And how, most of all, should we prevent someone like that from getting a gun?
It's really a difficult question. You know, one of the ironies is actually Arizona has one of the better laws about reporting people that seem to be mentally ill and a danger to themselves or others. Unfortunately, they also, Arizona, happens probably one of the lowest, not probably, it does have one of the lowest supporting agencies, et cetera, to help anybody that does happen to be mentally ill.
So they have a good law, but they just don't have the people to
enforce it. They have a phone that's manned 24/7, but you can call the phone line, apparently, and then you don't get any help anyway. You know, and, you know, it's a hard question to answer because there are so many variables in it. The real issue that I find that's important in terms of the mental illness with this is, as a country, we still do not consider mental illness something legitimate, something physical, you know, something that is not their own fault. I mean, we still blame people who are mentally ill. I mean, this goes all the way back to, what is it, Eagleton? Was running for vice president with, I forget whoever the heck it was.
McGovern,
yeah, way back with McGovern. And, of course, he had some depression issues and had been treated for depression. And so he had to resign from being the vice president because he had some mental issues.
But Terry, there's mental illness and then there's mental illness, right? I mean, there's people who suffer from depression.
No.
It's an awful
no.
thing.
No.
There's
no.
people
no.
who
no.
suffer
no.
from...
No, there's not. There's not.
Well, there's a difference between... My point is there's a difference between people who are mentally ill and people who are violently insane.
There's a difference only...
Most people who are mentally ill are not dangerous to society, but a subgroup of them are...
If they are getting treatment and medication. Now, if you take almost...
But
you
don't lump in people who are depressed with people who are schizophrenic and seeing voices and being told
to shoot
people.
If you are depressed and you verge towards suicide, which is a natural act of depression, and you receive no treatment and you receive no medication, you're liable to go down a very, very, very dark path. I'll be very honest. I am bipolar. I suffer from depression. You know, I take medication, thank God. You know, that has basically given me a level head. Well, I don't know if you would go that far. But
I doubt you've ever actually taken a gun and considered shooting somebody. And if you have, maybe you shouldn't tell me right now on this show.
It wasn't a gun. It was a machete and a, you know, no. No, but I mean, I do know that once you, you know, if you sink into depression, which I have done, and I mean deep depression, it is so dark, it is so despairing that you are not in any sense rational and you cannot be rational.
And so let me put you in this situation, and if any of the people that are here want to join us and give your own two cents, I'd really like to hear it from anyone.
We charge more than that, don't we?
The wait staff as well, if you, ma'am, would want to say something, you're welcome to. So what do you do? You are in a classroom.
First of all,
let me ask you this. Just give me the situation. You're in the classroom. Let's even say you're the teacher, not a fellow student. You're teaching at a community college, and you see somebody who's in there who's spouting inanities about Hitler and Communist Manifesto, and the government's out to get you, and they're stopped. They're actually, what do you say? The government's controlling our grammar. I mean, weird. And they're out, and we need to fight back. You see someone who, for whatever reason, you think is likely to return the next day with a semi-automatic and shoot people. You think the man needs help. What should you... So you call what? You call... I don't even know. 911? A mental health professional?
The point
what
is,
do you do?
The point
what
is,
should you do?
The point is, you're not going to get help. That's the sad tragedy. The only thing you probably could do if that's...
National Center for Mental Illness? I mean, we should help people here.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, our mental health care in this country is pathetic. I mean, you know, this goes all the way back to in the 70s or the 80s when they basically
Ronald Reagan shut everything down.
Yeah, shut everything down and put everybody out on the streets.
Right.
And then put them out on the streets. They said, oh, by the way, as long as you're out on the street, when you're feeling like it, drop by and get some medication because we know you need it. You know, good luck.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't work that way. I mean, it's pathetic. And it's only, you know, thank God now at least insurance companies are being required until the Republicans, repeal the health care bill.
They won't succeed.
But are requiring, you know, that insurance companies cover mental health as an illness. The thing to understand about mental health, because American public...
No, don't you understand? Republicans insist that if you don't want health care, you should have a right to refuse it. And if you're mentally ill and you want to have your gun and you don't want to be treated, that is your God-given right under the Second Amendment to go out, buy a semi-automatic, and shoot a bunch of people. It's in their version of the Constitution.
Did you hear about these congressmen in the legislature of Wyoming? Ten of them, putting forth a bill that if you participate in any way in the health care bill that has been passed, you are liable to be arrested and jailed for up to 2 years. I'm serious. I'm not making this up.
Well, that's clearly unconstitutional. But
if you happen to be a state official and participate in this bill, the sentence is 4 years.
I see.
Now, are these guys insane?
And if you...
That's a little questionable,
you know,
I'll say that.
Next thing you know, they're going to say, if you don't secede from the Union... we're going to impress you in the Confederate Army.
Yeah.
No, they tried that.
The first answer to this question has to be to understand that there is no such thing as mental illness in the sense that if there's a mental problem with someone, be it schizophrenia, be it epilepsy, be it depression, whatever it is a physical illness.
Well,
it is a physical problem. It is a physical problem within the brain, within the neurotransmitters of the brain.
It's a physiological problem, of course.
It's no different than you get diabetes or anything else.
But
it's
the
not
difference
something.
Is this. Most people with a disease, if left untreated, can harm themselves very terribly, and that's true certainly for mental illness. But with mental illness, if you're not treated, it's more like contagion. You can harm someone else. Typhoid Mary, right? I mean, we used to have quarantines. When we had people... Seriously. We took Typhoid Mary and we took her out of the... She used to, I think, be a food worker. And she didn't get typhoid, but she made everyone else in New York sit, and they put her on an island somewhere. There's got to be a way when someone is clearly insane... And I have no doubt.
But there's no way that the average citizen can judge that. There really isn't.
Okay, no, I'm not
there
saying.
Really
look, I think you got to go to a court. I agree. I think you got to
have
a court. You got to have a hearing, due process.
But
all
what
of
you
that.
Have to have but, is
but
one it, respect.
But
for
I'll
the,
tell you this. I'll tell you this. I think that you should be able to make a claim. You think someone's insane to some government official? Maybe I'm getting too big brother here. You may disagree.
I do.
Because
I know that half the three of us on the Raucous Caucus, somebody would be turning us in.
No, but look.
Three times
these,
a week. Are
I
you
don't
kidding?
Think that Jared Loughner and Cho, I forgot his first name. I think they were showing real severe. When I say insane, I don't mean crazy.
But
I mean
you know,
violently
but,
crazy.
But Cho,
I don't care if you talk to yourself. And you're homeless. I mean, and you see.
But Joe was getting.
I'm
treatment.
Talking about saying I'm going to kill somebody.
And this guy was getting some treatment. You know, he spoke to the college administrators. They knew there was a problem.
Shouldn't they be able to do something? Shouldn't they be at the very least? Look, I'm not saying lock him up, but prevent him from owning a gun. I mean, that's part of where I'm trying to get.
But how do you do that without somehow or other, you know, putting him on a report and therefore putting a tag on him that he has mental problems, which, of course, if that tag is there, it's going to have to be known by the gun owners. Therefore, it's going to have to be semi-public information. Therefore, going to ruin the guy's career and everything else.
Well, not
necessarily. And the fact
you can put it in a background check, and the guy just says denied, and the gun owner does, the gun seller doesn't have to know why he's denied. But yeah, it is a bit of a black mark. But I'm sorry,
yeah.
I'm sorry if you are violently insane. I don't want you owning a semi-automatic weapon.
I don't
either. And I know it cuts down on his freedom a little bit.
But you know what? You know what? We're in agreement here, and the simple solution is you have to have. Sorry, NRA, but you know, grow up. You know, you have to have legitimate gun control, period.
Okay.
You have to have background checks. You have to have background checks that probably include some kind of personal reference or some kind of family connection so that you know something about the history of the individual. If you don't have that, then it's just frankly bull.
That's even more restrictive. Only people I'm trying to restrict
you're damn right
owning
it's more restrictive.
Guns is the mentally ill and those and violent felons. I mean, I'm really, you know, people that have committed violent acts that have been proven in court and people who have demonstrated
mental
illness.
I don't know how you make that distinction, because this guy had been on medication before of some kind. He'd also had abused drugs before. Now, if he was receiving the right treatment and using it, it is not to say that he would be violently mental ill.
This guy tried to join the Army, and they refused him. Now, I don't think they refuse many people these days. You don't have to have a high school degree.
What was the basis? What was the basis for it?
They have not said.
Yeah, well, that's
they have not said.
It could be physical, you know, preparedness as well.
I don't think the woman with the glasses, the classmate, I don't think she's making it up for television when she says she sat near the door and was afraid any moment it was going to come back. And the first thing she did when she heard the shots was say, I'll bet that's Jared.
But, you know, the only thing she could do.
What could she do? In your view, in your perfect world, what would exist for this woman who sees this crazy
in the perfect world, it goes all the way back, dare I say it, to you know, every child needs a village, or whatever Hillary Clinton's book was. You know, it needs a community.
Every kid needs a village, but some people are born crazy. I mean, I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter. The point is, you need a community. The woman who observed this behavior, the professor that observed his behavior, should have been able to go to administrators and
What could they do legally? What should they be able to do?
Well, in Arizona, they could pick up a phone and say this guy's a problem.
And what would happen?
Well, in Arizona, nothing, because Arizona doesn't fund any of the agencies to take care of the problem.
So, at the very least, a social worker should be able to come out and investigate.
That's
exactly
right.
And in the interim, while this is pending, you get a block on your ability to buy a gun.
Well,
I think that's fair.
Yeah, if that were...
If a complaint is pending against you until it's resolved,
but you realize
no guns for you.
But it's tough, because you know, you got to realize the line between the snap, where the person goes over the edge and where the person is relatively sane, is a very, very fine line. We can always pretend that it's not, that I'm, with my medication, I'm truly sane.
Yeah, but these people that are involved in these massacres, they're over the line.
They're not even close to the line. They've snapped.
I mean, the things that they're
saying,
they're not even
but
close
consider
to
this,
sanity.
You know, consider this. If a student came to me, I'm teaching college, right? And I've taught college. And a student comes to me and says, Joe over here is nuttier than a fruitcake, and I think he's a real threat. So my first response would be back
to talk to Joe.
To Joe a little bit.
Now, and what if you come to the conclusion he's nuttier than the
fruitcake
and likely to be a threat?
And if I came to the conclusion, then I would have to go to some of the administrators above or the health
and
department.
And what would they do? Because
I'll tell you what would happen.
Nobody did anything. The teacher tried really hard.
No, he had some
really
treatment. He had some treatment. But I'll tell you what would happen. I would be facing a lawsuit immediately.
He's nuttier than a fruitcake. Where's he going to find a lawyer?
If he wanted to, he would sue me forever, and his family could sue me forever, too. And then I could take no action to, you know, further the case, because I would be fighting for my legal situation entirely. I mean, you don't want that society. I mean, this is a big problem, I understand, and I don't want them to have guns any more than you. But if you start allowing people to say, hey, Mark Levine is nuttier than a fruitcake, and you better investigate, then you're going to have to be investigated.
Well, but you know what? If their investigation is just to prevent me from owning a gun, if you take away someone's freedom, I agree, that's a huge step.
If you put that mark on them.
Someone has a comment? Because I'd love, by the way, anyone here at Ben's who wants to comment, I'm looking for answers here. Yeah. I don't claim to have them. Yeah. This gentleman seems to come up to the mic, sir.
Come on up.
Tell us your first name and give me your thoughts.
Or don't tell us your first name.
My name is Tony.
Hi, hey, Tony.
This is my first name.
Welcome.
And it's funny you guys are sitting here saying about help and all this stuff. Like, I went to Virginia Tech, so I've, like, sort of experienced directly and indirectly.
You weren't there that day.
The effects of the massacre.
Were you there that day?
No, I wasn't on campus that day, but I've just felt the effects of it.
Sure, yeah, I'm sure you
that
are.
We still feel to the day.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
And I think, like you were just saying, that's maybe you want to comment. You're saying, you know, in teaching college, I mean, it's one of those things where this person actually, in his own way, reached out for help, and in his own way, his roommates or, you know, colleagues or what have you, did make some reference to, but not wanting to stereotype him as nutty as a fruitcake. You know, and I think if there had been more outlets, if it just, like when you were just saying, who do you call? If it had been a more popular line, you know, for like a 911 or, you know, in New York when you want information for directions, you dial 311 or what have you. Like if that was more of a common thing and it wasn't so much feeling like I'm going to be nutty as a fruitcake if I call
in. If there wasn't such stigma.
I look on it as sort of a policymaker. I used to work in Congress, and I wrote some legislation, and my question is, what should people do? What should be the law? Let's say we had a 611, I don't know, some number, wouldn't be 911, but some number, 1-800-CRAZY, I don't know, so that you should be able to call and say, my classmate is shouting, you know, he's violent,
you
racist
can't do it
imagery.
That way. You can't do it that
See,
way.
I think the problem you run into way. Like that is, mm-mm. you know, as we know in history, people were called witches.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of
oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're back.
It's a fine line.
Hey, Tony, you're right.
It's a fine line. But what do you do to keep someone like that from owning a gun?
You've got to take away the stigma, first off.
Exactly.
That's what you've got to do.
I think the first piece is letting people know that it's not, you know, this incredibly bad thing. Like, matter of fact, my girlfriend, she was studying for a PhD, but her lithium level was off. And basically, she had to take medication just to stay balanced, or she would get really, really super duper happy, and just the opposite of that as well. So, you know, I didn't look at her bad. I mean, I still dated her. I mean, so obviously,
guess I'm not looking at bipolar or lithium. I'm looking at people who, for whatever reason, medical imbalance, whatever it is, are threatening. When you have someone,
if someone threatens, they should be turned in. Well, at the end of the day,
someone who expresses, dangerous stuff.
Let me give you an example.
I wouldn't want to be threatened by anybody in this room.
And I don't mean just threaten you personally.
And I don't know if they're crazy, but if they're talking about anybody's
talking about killing anybody,
yeah,
I think it's okay to turn them in.
But let me give you.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate your comment.
Thank you, Tony, very much. Yeah. Let me give you an example, a tragic example of a situation that I know of personally. And I can't give too much identification because it would screw things up. But there was a young man that I know that had served in Iraq. I think he had 2 tours of duty. He came back. He had problems.
PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder?
Something. I don't know exactly what it was. I won't label it. But he had a mental problem that was leading him towards suicide. He went AWOL. He went into a hotel in a city near here, and he called suicide hotline or whatever the helpline was in the military repeatedly and said, I'm in trouble, I need help. He could get no response from the damn army.
Did they answer the phones?
They answered the phones. He went out of desperation in public in front of a hotel and slashed his wrist in public.
That's his cry for help as possible.
There are so many people in this country that are crying for help. And I don't know about this guy in Arizona, but there are so many people, there's thousands of people crying for help. And our system, our society says, screw you, pull yourself up by your damn bootstraps. And that's the problem. And until we take away the stigma and recognize it, but people do have different mental capacities, mental characteristics, different needs, and treat them with respect and sympathy and compassion, we are not going to keep the nuts from getting guns.
I think the Republicans call that socialism, Ted.
Yeah, right. Well, what do you call it if people start turning each other in?
Yeah, that's
worse.
That may be worse.
That's worse. That's the Soviet Union right there. I'm out of here.
That may be worse.
You know.
It's a tough situation.
It is very tough.
Wish there was a way if you saw. I guess Tony helped me really clarify in my own mind. Wait till it becomes a threat. Wait till it becomes some kind of
violent... It used to be
threat.
With some gun control, you know, you could go out and put a permit in to buy a gun, and by golly, you couldn't get that gun for another couple weeks.
Well, I know.
Now, almost
it's
inevitably.
Called a waiting period.
Yeah, almost inevitably.
So if you want to go out and kill your spouse, you at least have to, like, think about it maybe for
maybe
a few days.
Talk it over.
Maybe change your mind.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
So there's really two more issues here in addition to mental illness, and we're going to get we're going to have a break soon. But one is the issue of gun control in general and what should be legal and what shouldn't be legal. And the other is the issue that's come up a lot in the media lately, which is the level of rhetoric. Very famously, Sarah Palin had about 6 months ago, before the election, she had a listing on her website or Facebook or Twitter, whatever it was, of a map of the United States.
Yep.
And it had crosshairs and names, literally crosshairs, like the kind you see in gun sites,
mm-hmm.
over members of Congress that she wanted to take out.
Over their district.
And three that were take out were red. And Gabrielle Giffords was still gray, along with another 30 or so people that she wanted to take out. So she has it in her crosshairs, and three are red, the three that are out, and the other 45 are gray. There's also the Sherrod Engel talked about Second Amendment remedies. Second Amendment, of course, is all about bearing arms. Remedies to having problems with your Congress.
And to be fair about it, President Obama, to his shame, said during his campaign, if you guys come at us with a knife, we'll respond with a gun.
That's true.
The presidential candidate of the United States of America. The language itself is pathetic.
Yeah.
And the culture that breeds that language is pathetic.
True, and it is very much part of our imagery in America. But to me, putting people in crosshairs, literally a target on their back.
And the very next day when she spoke out about it, you know, her campaign door, her office campaign door was...
She said, what did she say in her tweet? She said, don't retreat, reload.
Yep.
Reload, not advance or come back.
No, never retreat,
or march.
Reload.
What do
and
you reload?
And one of the times she was making that statement that I saw, which I didn't realize till I saw it this time, one of the times she's wearing a tight black leather coat. I mean, I'm serious, and I'm going, holy cow.
I'm telling your wife, Terry. I'm telling Jan all about you watching Sarah Palin in that
I guess
black
my gestures
leather
weren't
jacket.
The best there.
Your gestures... see, that's why you have to come down to Ben's and watch Terry do his Sarah Palin gestures.
When my wife doesn't come here anymore, I guess.
Exactly. She's offended. But you know, and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh comparing Obama to Hitler.
What did Glenn Beck say he wanted to kill? There was somebody he said he actually wanted to kill. He said he wanted to choke them. And then he said, is that wrong? I don't think it is.
Is it wrong to say that?
Yeah.
So the question is...
Glenn Beck is obviously one of those insane people
here's the thing.
That we should call in about.
I don't believe that Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, or Glenn Beck, as awful as I think these human beings are, actually wants to kill Democratic politicians. But the question is whether their imagery pushes people over the edge. And whether we all have a right to free speech. I am not talking about taking away their right to free speech. But is it fair to condemn them and to say that you're going to push someone who's on the verge of insanity, someone like Jared Loughner, that you are likely to push them over the edge? Now, we don't know that's what happened in this case, but is it a fair criticism? Because they're saying, hey, it's not our fault that some crazy person goes over the edge. So that's the question when we come back. I want you to think about Terry. I want the people
to think about.
And hopefully we're going to have all the answers to this when we come back.
Five. Got five answers.
Right after this.
Listen up, WPFW family. On January 15th, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, the MLK Library in D.C. will be opening the Domu Smith Archives, honoring the life and work of our beloved warrior for peace and justice and former host of Spirit in Action here on WPFW. To learn more about the Domu Smith collection at the MLK Library, tune in to a special edition of Freedom of Speech that will air Wednesday, January 12th from 3 to 4. That's Freedom of Speech on Wednesday, January 12th.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Welcome back to the Rockies. Caucus. This is Mark Levine sitting here with
Terry D. Kester and Poor Garland. Poor Garland's buried in snow, some snow.
Garland Nixon,
somewhere.
Apparently there's a snowman somewhere, and if you scrape it hard enough, you will
You'll
see Garland,
Garland
inside the snow person.
It's possible.
Possible. You never know. It's just a weather whip. Let's just face it. I mean, come on, Garland.
Maybe just walk
here in the snow.
Yeah, come on. Come on. You can make it, Garland.
You can do it. You're
you
strong.
It. Yeah, get a, All right. get a snow sled with dogs, you know.
So Garland is not here, but I'm sure he's listening as we mock him.
I should hope.
And yet we have four hardy souls right here.
Oh, we have 40. We have 40 represented by four right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's three. So seven total. Anyway, well, you still can make it, by the way, to Ben's Next Door, 1213 U Street, and add your 2 cents. We're trying to figure out how to make sense of this tragedy. How do we think about it? How should we think about it? And the question I asked before the break, and always all of you in the audience are more than welcome to add your 2 cents. We're always glad to hear from you. Is it fair, Terry, to blame the likes of Sarah Palin or Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh, people who are using violent imagery or Sharon Engel, people who are comparing Obama to Hitler? Clearly that's reprehensible. I think it's clear. But they have a free speech right to say it. Is it fair to say, as some are, that someone on the verge of insanity is likely to take that violent rhetoric, whether or not Jared Loughner did it, someone is likely to do it and likely to attack, and if we don't censor them, at least condemn them and encourage them? You want to attack Obama's health care plan, fine, but don't call him Hitler.
Because there's two parts to the answer, as far as I'm concerned. The first part is not my idea. This is incredible to me. This is the wisest thing that I have read or heard since this whole tragedy happened in terms of response to it and to the question that you raised. And as you probably know, Mark Scott, Gabrielle's Giffords' husband, is a space shuttle astronaut.
Kelly.
Wasn't it Kelly? I'm sorry. Yeah. Kelly, right. And his brother, his twin brother, is also an astronaut. And he, in fact, is on the space station right now.
Right. He's in space right now.
Right now. And here's his statement in response to this. And I'm quoting here. As I look out the window, I see a very beautiful planet. A planet that seems very inviting and very peaceful. Unfortunately, it is not. These days, we are constantly reminded of unspeakable acts of violence and the damage that we can inflict upon one another, not just with our actions, but also with our irresponsible words. We're better than this. We must be better than this. To me, that is the most thoughtful comment that I have heard about this whole tragedy. And I think, honestly, and I mean this in terms of myself, in terms of you, in terms of every listener out there, you know, we've got to look at ourselves. Because all of us, and I know I have been guilty of it. I know I have been guilty of it on the air. I know I have been guilty of it in social situations. I have raised the level of the rhetoric to the point where it is dangerous. You know, now whether or not somebody's going to act because I say something, I have no idea. But I know I have contributed to that. And somehow or other, we've got to be able to discuss and debate the issues, as I know we try to do, but never let ourselves get to that point where we are advocating violence or advocating pain or hurt or harm on any other human individual, no matter how much we disagree with them.
Right.
You know, a caller called me once, and I'll never forget this, and the caller said to me, because it was really a challenge, he said, this was earlier in my broadcasting career, he said, Terry, you've got to respect your enemies. You've got to respect them as human beings. And, you know, that really hit me. I mean, it really did. In fact, he didn't use the word enemies. He said, your opponents. You know, and I had to retreat. I had to pull back and say, you know, you're right.
Yeah, I've been watching Sheriff, I think Drubnik his name. I may have the name wrong. Yeah. But he's the sheriff of Pima County.
Right.
Going out there and really pleading with people in punditry, in the world in which we live, to pull back the rhetoric. And it's kind of what I mean, and you're right. You get mad. I mean the Supreme Court in the Citizens United case made me livid. Bush v. Gore as well. I mean, they, and I said it was a coup d'etat. I still call it a coup d'etat.
I remember your lividity.
Meaning an unlawful change of government. But I never advocated murdering Justice Scalia. I didn't. I don't like the man. I don't trust the man. I don't think he's correct. But he is an American, and there's a difference between strongly disagreeing with someone and violently disagreeing with someone. And the sheriff came out and said to all of us, watch your rhetoric.
Yeah.
Don't use violent imagery.
Well, that's
Say,
the problem.
I disagree with you. Here's why. And I got to tell you something. Even the Republicans I debate all the time, most of them, very few of them do I really, truly dislike. Scalia probably is one of those. But most, or Dick Cheney for that matter, but most of them, most of them are not that. Most of them are people who are patriotic Americans with whom I strongly disagree and see things differently from me, and I invite them on my show. They come, we debate, I disagree, and a lot of times we agree to disagree. And it would be good if there were that kind of discourse back and forth.
It'd be
because
good
very
if
few people are beyond the pale. There's some. If you're
be
racist,
good, you know, it'd be
you
good
know,
if there
you're
were
beyond the pale.
It would be good if all of us would do that. I mean, and I'll even go to the fire to, you know, blame a little bit of what happens on WPFW. I have brought on libertarians and have been attacked repeatedly for bringing on libertarians.
We need to talk with people with whom we disagree.
And we've got to bring people together that way. And it is, but, you know, the other part of the answer to the question, this is a cultural phenomenon. And you cannot dismiss that. Our culture, the American culture, is a culture founded on and sustained on violence. It truly is, whether it's football, whether it's guns, whether it's politics.
They used to cane each other in the Senate. One guy actually caned to death.
Yeah, I mean,
we have duels, right? Yeah. We had Adam Burr kill Alexander Hamilton in a duel.
This is a violent country. You know, this is a country that came over here and said, here's a whole mess of, you know, Native American people here that
First
are
we'll
in our way.
First we'll take their land and kill
we'll
all of them.
We'll just push them out.
Right.
Then we bring millions of slaves over who we beat, whip, destroy their families and everything else.
Right.
This is a violent country. We escaped that a little bit by going through what? The Civil War, one of the most violent, horrible, atrocious wars in the history of mankind. You know, in terms of percentage of the population, it's unbelievable.
In terms of total debt, it's still the...
for us.
For America.
Yeah, for
it's,
us.
It's still the most dangerous
war.
Yeah,
and somehow we've got to mature and realize that, yes, this is a violent country. Yes, extreme individualism plays into it. Yes, we
but
need
Terry,
to
I have,
grow
I,
up.
I have the answer. I have all the solutions to all our problems.
Good.
And it's going to come from our person right here.
All right. Jim, well, straighten us out here. All right.
Tell us your first name and what...
It's
what
Jim,
you,
I swear.
Jim.
It's
oh, you've already
Jim.
Met him. Okay, welcome, Jim, to the Raucous Caucus. What are your thoughts?
Ben's Chili Bowl. Ben's next door.
Yeah.
Speaking to the microphone.
What is the difference between, say, America and Europe in this regard? Because Europe also has a very violent history. We saw in this century horrible violence taking place in the two world wars, in the Bosnian conflict. But they don't have this particular problem. And we have a history of celebrity assassination. It's not just politicians. It's John Lennon. It's what is it about America? And is there something going on? Is there something playing this within America?
You've given me a great segue, Jim. A great segue. Because you are segueing to what I believe is the difference between America and Europe. It's not the violence. It's not the hatred. There's plenty of that in Europe. You ever been to an English soccer game? These people are ready to kill each other. It's the guns. In England, you got lots of crazy people. You got lots of angry people. God knows there's tons of racism throughout Europe. But most people do not have ready access to easy firearms and to semi-automatic weapons.
I think the guns are symptomatic. I think it's not just the guns. They're symptomatic. To me, the difference, and you phrased the question well, Jim, the difference is World War II. You know, Europe was decimated. You know, every single country suffered horribly. United States, other than the Civil War, has not won.
Yeah, but Yugoslavia suffered horribly, and yet there was still ethnic cleansing in Kosovo and Bosnia. I mean, I don't think Europe has learned its lesson necessarily. Maybe Germany has.
Europe has matured somewhat beyond...
Oh, no, they haven't.
Oh, yes, they have.
When's
yes,
the last time you were in Europe?
Last year. Thank you kindly.
There's tremendous, there's tremendous anti-Muslim prejudice.
Jeez,
there's still anti-Semitism.
No matter where I went in Italy, no matter where I went in France, no matter where I went in Greece, You know, I didn't see any citizen with gun. I go to the Shenandoah Valley, I go to a Mexican restaurant, I sit down in a Mexican restaurant, and these rednecks...
But now you're making my point.
These rednecks come walking in with heat all over the place.
But you're making my point. I'm saying there's racists in Europe, there's racists in the United States.
I'm
there's
not
violent
about
people
that.
In Europe, there's violent people in the United States. In my mind, and it's the not the attitude that's different.
It is.
It's
of course
the
it
guns
is.
That are different.
No, Mark. The reason there's not the guns is because the society has a different attitude towards the guns.
I agree with
and
you.
And the society, the country, the people.
But the people aren't nicer or less violent.
I didn't say they were nicer.
Racist.
I didn't say they were nicer, but they
I mean, I like Europeans. I like Americans, too.
They did say we don't want guns everywhere. That's the people's decision in Europe. It's different. Go ahead.
In Michael Moore's movie, Bowling for Columbine, he makes the point that Canada also has very liberal gun laws. It's also a multi-ethnic society.
Yep.
But they don't have the same problems that we have here.
Yeah.
What is it about us?
Now, I would actually say the Canadians are nicer people than we are. I think they are less racist and less violent because they do have guns in Canada. They do have hunting. They have, particularly out west in Canada, they have the whole hunting culture. I don't know that Europeans are nicer than we are, but Canadians probably are. I don't know many.
The reason is historical. And it gets back to our founding. We have this ridiculous mythology. Remember, I've written the scripts for...
The Canadians got rid of Native Americans, too.
I'm not talking about that. They don't have this mythology that we are exceptional, that we are God chosen, that we have the right,
That's true.
Individualism is everything, that the way to win any battle is with the military, and we proved that with the British when we freed ourselves, which is nonsense because the French won the war anyway. We didn't. But, you know,
we helped.
We piddled, you know. I'm sorry. I mean, I've been paid to be an historian and write about this, you know, so we piddled, and George Washington was not a good general. Sorry, he was very confused and didn't know what the heck he was doing. The French won it. The point is we've created this mythology about America that if you have a problem, the way you do it is you, and if you're a man, you turn on your testosterone and you assault somebody, you know, and you do not retreat, you reload.
Have you ever been to an English pub?
Yes.
There's plenty of assaults there when people are drunk.
Well, of course.
I want to get back to the issue of guns.
But we don't have a
get back to the issue of
where
guns
we
because
preach it.
I think that drunken and crazy men have been violent and assaultive throughout all peoples, all races, and all countries for all of time.
Except for Pittsburgh. Nice, calm town.
Great. But my point is that it's way too easy to own a gun. And I am fine with hunters. They want to go out and hunt. That's part of American tradition. You go, you get a hunter's license, and you don't shoot deer with a semi-automatic pistol. If people want a gun for self-defense, I'm actually okay with that, too, if you don't have a violent record and you're not mentally ill. But this idea that you can go out... particularly in Arizona, which you can carry, not only buy semi-automatic weapons without so much as saying boo, you can carry them concealed, and that's the law.
Yeah.
That's the law in Arizona. And what happens is hundreds and thousands of Mexican drug dealers buy their guns in Arizona, go down and make war on the Mexican army, and they're winning.
Well,
and
it's
more
the
than
Constitution,
10,000
Mark.
Innocent Mexicans. They don't have our Constitution in Mexico.
No.
More than 10,000 innocent Mexicans are dead.
We have the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. It's as much a right as, you know, the right to have children in America. And it's just as sacred. And that's the insanity. See, other countries don't have that kind of insanity in their beginning. They don't have a Constitution that says, geez, everybody ought to be able to carry a gun and should carry one as soon as they possibly can, preferably as soon as they reach puberty.
You know, I brought my Constitution with me.
I was afraid you were going to bring your gun.
No.
Got me worried.
Did not bring it. No, that's not legal in D.C. Thank God. No, I brought my Constitution with me because I'm really, really tired of people misreading
the Second Amendment.
You
got a problem.
I am a textualist. I am a strict constructionist. I always have been, and I'm really, really tired of people misreading it. Yeah. So I will once and again...
Hello, Scalia. Are you dropping by? Come on.
...read the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution so that people know what it says. It says, and I quote, a well-regulated militia...
I'll read the whole thing.
...being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed. In other words, because we need a well-regulated militia to protect our free state, because we don't want the federal government infringing on, you know, whiskey farmers, they did the whiskey rebellion, because we want well-regulated militias to defend us. And let me tell you something. I firmly believe that we should not keep any arms from well-regulated state militias. And that, if the state guards want to have their stuff, that's fine. The Second Amendment does not and has never protected an individual's right to have a weapon.
Oh, I hate to tell you, you're wrong.
The people, whenever it says the people, that is a collective right. It's not an individual right. When the Constitution wants to talk about individual rights, it refers to persons, such as every person has equal protection.
Two points. Which one, the commas weren't there originally; they were added later.
No, they were.
Yes, they were. Secondly, practically there was very little punctuation back there. Just go back and look at old letters from that era. There's very little punctuation.
It wouldn't matter whether it's there or not. It's a dependent clause.
Yes, it would.
It's a dependent clause that modifies the independent clause.
You know,
I'm a grammarian.
Believe me, I am not in favor of people having guns. You know that. Anybody that's listened to me at all has known that for years. But a well-armed militia, what the militia actually was...
Well-regulated militia.
What the militia was... the townspeople.
That's right.
The farmers.
Right.
These were not enlisted men
in
a soldier. They were people, you know, in the community.
And they were regulated. If Jared Loeffner wanted to join them, they would say, I'm sorry, you're nuttier than a fruitcake.
No, they probably wouldn't. But anyway, so the point is...
Yes, they would.
The point is they all have their weapons and the right to their weapons. And then when they are called into service, they bring their own weapons. That is the tradition on which it's founded, whether we like it or not. It's not a question of having an armory and you go there and you get your weapon. You've got your weapon.
You know what?
Called to service. You bring it. And that's what the militia was back then.
If Jared Loeffner had a musket and he had to, you know, pound it in and
You'd put the armor there.
And yes, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, that would help.
I'd be fine with that.
So would
By the time he got a shot off, it'd be 20 minutes later, he'd be in cuffs, and I wouldn't be worried about Jared Loeffner.
Yeah, let Sarah...
We are not living in the 1770s.
You know,
right? Muskets.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, there's a difference. You know, which Constitution are you going to read in the Congress? You're going to read the Constitution that actually happened and we had to change because it's flawed, because it is a living document, or you're going to pretend that this Constitution is something sacred, which is absurd. Even Congressman Jackson said it's sacred. How dare he? This is a piece of paper with a few laws written by a few confused men who disagreed on everything and came up with the best solution they possibly could.
But if we don't have the rule of law, we have nothing.
I'm not opposing law. I'm just saying don't make this sacred.
I have no problem saying that if you have a well-regulated militia, that the people there can be armed. I'm fine with that. That's not the situation that allows crazy people
to own guns. It's not the situation today.
Now, let's talk about... because.
There were no crazy people back during the Revolution,
by the way.
There were
always crazy people, and there always will be crazy people.
Really? Back during the Revolution? Who knew?
Heck, one of them was vice president. Aaron Burr.
I thought they were all saints.
Accused of treason.
I was sure they were saints. Saints and patriots,
in fact,
right?
I think there's only been two vice presidents accused of treason. Aaron Burr and Dick Cheney. But only when he turned in Valerie Plame. So in terms of what gun laws we should have, here's my proposal, and we'll see if you agree, and maybe some of our listeners will tell me where they agree. Here's my view. Semi-automatic weapons, unless you're in the military or in the police force, you just don't need them. You don't need them for self-defense.
Agree 100%.
You don't need them if someone breaks into your home. You don't need them to shoot, to hunt. You don't need them. All right? So I would ban those.
Ban those.
Other than that, I would... if people want to have rifles to go hunting, I'm fine with it. Six shooters for self-defense. If you're not mentally ill and you're an adult and you pass a test, just like we pass a test to drive a car.
Yeah, you would think maybe.
You would pass a test so that you know, to put your safety on your gun, right?
Yeah. And anybody that takes the gun test, and while he's taking the gun test, who shoots the instructor, we know we got a problem.
We don't give them a gun.
We don't give them a license.
So you're not
mentally ill.
Yeah. You're not a violent felon. You're not convicted of domestic violence. You don't beat your wife.
It's just common sense. I mean, somebody has
to... want to be responsible with this weapon that kills 10,000 people a year.
Somebody's got to be responsible in our government, and I haven't heard one congressman or president who has the guts to say it. Look, let's be honest here. Let's really be honest. What is the purpose of having a gun? The purpose of a gun, what it's designed to do, is kill people.
Right.
That's what it is designed to do.
Or rifles kill animals for hunters.
Well, to kill and destroy.
It's designed to kill.
Designed and kill living creatures, including human beings.
Sure.
That's what it's designed to do. There's certain ammunition that is designed, in fact, to blow apart your insides. You know, you take a case
They call them cop killer bullets
because
they go through bulletproof vests.
Yeah, but there's the worst kind is one that just get into you and just tear apart. and yeah. literally destroy organs. This is ammunition anybody can buy today. Anybody can buy this
because
ammunition.
Because you know that when you shoot a deer, you don't want to actually eat any of the
well,
venison.
No, you just want to blow its intestines to shreds. You know, I mean, this kind
it
of...
It makes no sense.
I mean, why
it's
not
It's not for self-defense.
You know, if we really believe this, what we should do is give everybody in the country... You know, that's reached puberty, their own bazooka.
But that's what the NRA you know. Wants.
Yeah,
no,
and
but,
let
but
them have
Terry,
their own bazooka and go out and just take care of business.
Terry,
you know?
That's the NRA argument. People,
they want all bazookas?
Guns don't kill people. Kill
yeah,
people,
right,
kill people.
Yeah,
if
right.
that kindergartner had had a gun when the, in the Amish classroom when the guy, the, another crazy person went in, remember, took all those kids hostages,
yep.
if we had just armed all those five-year-olds, one of them would have taken a pot shot at him.
Yeah.
Now they might have killed you know, a few of the kids
mean,
in the
you
class.
You have to realize what the guns are for. You have to realize what the gun industry is for. You have to realize what the technology of the gun industry is. It is strictly designed to create more and more instruction. Take the case of Tillman. You know, in the football player that was killed in...
friendly fire in Iraq.
Friendly fire. They literally, with 50 caliber machine guns, they blew his head off. That's the power of 50 caliber machine guns. Almost unlimited rounds being fired.
Okay, but
it's
we,
insane.
But Terry,
you know, and
we,
this
we
is the whole
in,
point.
We live in Washington, D.C., where... Probably the single most powerful lobby in this town
is the NRA.
Is the
right
National
out there
Rifle
in Virginia.
Association.
Yeah, right out there along
and
Route 66.
As I recall, the last national politician to really take on the gun lobby was Al Gore.
Yep.
Who won his election in 2000, of course, wasn't allowed to serve. But since Al Gore did not win enough to be beyond the margin of cheating and stealing, a lot of politicians, including the Democratic Party,
say,
we'll fight for this, we'll fight for that, we'll fight for unions or civil rights or immigration, but we're not going to fight the gun lobby.
No.
They're just too powerful. And one of the things that I find very interesting, and of course I used to work in Congress, used to work for Barney Frank, who's very strong on gun control.
Yes, he is.
But he taught me something. He said, if you look at polls... 70-75% of Americans are for the common sense gun control that I've talked about. Not banning guns, but ban semi-automatic weapons, make sure people pass a gun license test, don't let the crazy and the violent felons own a gun. 70-75% of Americans support common sense gun reform. But the 20% that don't are very loud and vociferous about it. And one of the things he taught me is that in democracy, it's not just whether the majority believes something or not, because a majority of Americans support gun control. Even a majority of Republicans support gun control. But the ones who love their guns, they care so much, they become one-issue candidate. They say, well, you know, I'll decide, but if you want to make me register my gun, I'm not going to vote for you. And so strength of conviction actually has power, even as a minority. It's important for the issues that we care about, whether it's, you know, the environmental or civil rights or union, whatever issues, that the power of even a minority, if you're vociferous enough, you get your way. And the people who support the NRA are some of the most vociferous in America.
Well, it's not only the most vociferous, it's just simply that they have an extraordinary amount of money. And once again, until we get some congressmen, which so far I don't see any, that are really going to fight for campaign finance reform, you are never going to be able to correct any of these problems.
But this is even
because
hard.
This is a perfect example of what happens. You say a majority of Americans want gun control.
They do.
There's a minority with a ton of money. They get their way. What is that telling you?
But see, it's not the just
that, the system don't work.
It's more difficult than that because I'm the first one, as you know, to criticize corporations and Citizens United all putting money into our
lobbyist,
system.
NRA.
Because they're not playing with their own money. But the NRA, most of those are not rich Americans trying to help corporations.
No, but
they are people who love their guns.
Yeah.
And frankly, they're a little bit pathological, fearing that people are going to take away their guns. President Obama never said he's going to take away anybody's guns. Never. I mean, maybe I don't know how people even own the assault rifles, but that's not even that many. And yet what happened? As soon as he was elected president, gun ownership went way up. Ammunition went way up.
Yeah.
Apparently people who own 20 guns now feel they have to own 50
30,
guns.
Right.
Other than our president happens to be half black, why are people buying all these guns?
Because,
Rush Limbaugh?
Because, you know, that's a
what
big,
is the threat?
It's nothing to do with the threat. It has, you know,
I mean, it's really scary to see.
We got to get
They've
honest.
They've skyrocketed gun sales just since 2009.
We got to get honest with ourselves in the fact that the human being is a very flawed, dangerous creature that can go one way or the other. And unless we admit that about ourselves and everybody else, we're never going to be honest. Unless we admit that testosterone unchecked is probably the most dangerous drug you can imagine.
Maybe we should just ban men. We'll just lock up all men, because women don't usually commit these
kinds of crimes. Well, yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know. I know a lot of women that would agree with that in general.
Maybe so. And by the way, anyone who'd like to speak is still welcome to. We got a few minutes left if you want. If not, just sit and listen and relax. That's fine.
I mean, it gets down to being honest about yourself. It gets down to being honest about your society, about your technology, about your culture,
history. We have only a few minutes left. What do you think will be, if any, the outcome, the policy outcome that changes, whether it's laws or rhetoric or guns or crazy? What do you think, if anything, will be changed by what happened in Arizona? Are we just destined to repeat ourselves again and again and again?
At this point, with all the mythology and the cultural nonsense we have, we are destined.
Tucson will change nothing.
If you can have a Hinckley shoot the President of the United States and blow away Grady, you know, to injuring him for life, and then a few years later the laws are just repealed and nobody gives a damn about Grady,
Jim Brady.
Yeah, why do you think it's not going to continue here? I mean, this time we only shot a congressman.
Well, Hinckley was an 81.
We shot a president before. We didn't care.
Hinckley was in 81, and they didn't get rid of the assault rifle ban until, I think, 2004, 2005.
Yeah, and how long did it take to
20,
even get it passed?
Years.
You know?
Yeah, it took
another 5 or 6 years.
I think they
years,
did it during Clinton's time.
Yeah, so for a few years, we pretended we were good guys.
Start,
you know?
Well, the problem is now we have a House controlled by Republicans. It won't even come up for a vote.
Well, the Democrats won't stand up to the NRA.
You know, I read interesting. Cortland Malloy writes op-eds in the Washington Post, and he wrote a really penetrating one that I read just a couple days ago. He talked about the fact that our new Speaker of the House, John Boehner, is an emotional man. He cries a lot. You know, when he becomes Speaker, he cries and talks about his background. But he didn't shed a tear for what happened in Arizona.
Nope.
Not a single tear.
And he's very emotional.
And
cries
at the drop of a hat.
Almost,
I shed a few tears when I watched, particularly, I'll tell you, when I heard that woman talk about taking that magazine from the crazy boy while the two men were on top, and she didn't consider herself a hero, and I consider her a hero, and the staffer who saved Congresswoman Gifford's life because he knew some nursing, a young gay man.
That is one really good thing that has come out of this.
And the two men that jumped on top of him, risked their lives, one was shot in the head. You know, most Americans, to our credit, are not violent.
No. Nope.
Most Americans are not crazy.
Nope.
A lot of people, when the shots rang out, didn't run the other way. They ran toward the shooter, and they saved lives. And that happened in September 11th, too.
This is one of the positive things.
And we have to remember, as much as we attack our violent culture, that there are lots of good Americans who are out there, just good people.
Who stand up, yeah. And this is kind of new. I mean, new in our culture. I mean,
it's not new.
It's more
There's
common.
Always been it's, the
no,
American
No, no, yeah,
hero.
But it's more common since 9/11, you know, and it's a horrible way
I remember Lenny Skutnik when the Air Florida jet hit the 14th Street Bridge in Washington. I was a kid, and there was ice
I
in
know,
the...
I
and
know.
He this federal worker jumped in the water,
yeah,
and how would he save? 10 lives?
16, I believe.
Something
16.
Like that.
Yeah.
There is goodness out there, and my hope, and we got to wrap it up, but my hope is that we can use this, I think, inherent goodness that's in the vast majority of human beings in the United States and around the globe, and find some common sense solutions to keep the craziness that's always going to be out there, to keep the violence that's always going to be out there from owning some of the most destructive weapons.
You may not believe it, Mark, but you and I are in 100% agreement.
It happens every now and then.
And that it does.
We got to wrap it up here. Next week, we're going to be in studio, so don't come next week. But in 2 weeks, we'll be back at Ben's.
Right.
Please join us here, 1213 U Street. Real quick, Terry, where can they find you if they want to?
Well, they can go to raucouscarcass@gmail.com. They can go to WPFW.org. They can go to Facebook and find me there as well.
And you can find this particular show, which
or you
I
can come
will
down
archive.
Here.
On my website at marklevineradio.com, along with some of my other things. And we always enjoy coming here. Thank you to our audience.
Yeah, here. Great audience. Yeah, thank you, Jim, for your questions. Thank you, Tony,
And we'll be back
for your
next week. Don't miss us. Every Tuesday at 7 p.m. right here on the Raucous Caucus.
did.
WPFW, Washington.